Blog Talk Radio.
Sing this song to my brother. Gunshot blast is a memory. I wanna sing this song to my brother. That sad, sad, sad is my melody. We'll be together on that precious day, and we won't ever see sadness in our lives. No more tears, no more crying.
Yes, I want to sing this song to my brother from a different mother, as well as my sister from a different mother. Blessings and greetings, greetings and blessings, blessed souls. We are meriting this most mundane and yet paradoxically existential of eternal moments to be staying alive in Torah Chaim, instructions of life, Torah Chesed, instructions of kindness, Torah Rachamim, instructions of mercies. You're now tuned into Blog Talk Radio, and we humbly assert and even quietly suggest we're the higher inner frequencies. Blog Talk Radio, we call ourselves Soul Class. This is Soul Class 678, Creator, Faith, and Reason, Part 2. Baruch Hashem, blessed is our Creator. Shalom, peace, and bracha, blessing upon the entire human family experience. That's all 7 billion of us. With Creator's help, we plan to broadcast right now on January 21st, 2018, live from Turtle Island, a.k.a. the USA. Unified Soul Actualization. It's now 11:32 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Program content will focus on amplifying ideas conveyed in a new book by national radio host, Dr. Michael Savage. Now, he does not need our endorsement or criticism for his latest efforts, which is his book, God, Faith, and Reason. Our intent is actually to extract out ideas that perhaps he may have consciously or subconsciously wanted to convey, but for reasons known or unknown to Dr. Savage, such perceptions did not reach the pages he wrote upon. Our call-in number is 347-838-8669. Meanwhile, may the Eternal Creator bless and protect you and your family peacefully and pleasantly. The tags for today's program are Eternal Creator, Divine Image, Universal Redemption, Children of Israel collaborating with the Children of Noah, rising all forms of hatred, jealousy, and unwarranted forms of competition, Chassidus Torah, Faith in Creator. And we're just going to have to turn down a little bit of the music. This wonderful song by A Song to My Brother by my brother, older brother, who's now in L.A., of Yitzhak Paton. And that was a song written in dedication to his brother, written way back in 1982 with an upgrade in the last year or two because he lost a son who was in the IDF. Now joining me to upgrade our humble efforts today is our Rambam teacher, student, and the seminar teachings of the Neshra Godol, Dennis Ryan. Good morning, sir.
Shalima, which is the same as shalom in Hebrew, but that's Aramaic.
Thank you, Dennis, for that pointing that out. Dennis, when I mentioned that Dr. Savage may have intended, consciously or subconsciously, to share the information that we're about hopefully to share for the next hour, I say that in a spirit of humility because I've talked with people in the music industry, and I know from my own experiences writing, being published professionally in the newspaper business, there's nothing really ever finished in terms of some sort of endeavor which we call an expression of culture, because the expression of culture is basically an accumulation of human intellectual achievement, which is a collective outgrowth of some region in the world or all the regions of the world in order to enhance our efforts to look beyond just the mere physical manifestations of our creation. So I'd like you to comment on that, that, you know, even with our efforts, we are communicating ideas that we're aware of, hopefully. But at the same time, too, there is a subconscious broadcast that perhaps we're not aware of, because when a human being gets together, they should never take any moment as just, you know, it happened the day before, it's going to happen tomorrow. We never know what's going to come out of our communicating with each other. Your takes on these matters.
Well, all humans here are on a temporary basis. But life goes on. And I think what you're talking about is the life that goes on. And that is that we never really finish anything, because we hope that some other human will pick it up and carry it on. You take Dr. Savage, for instance. He is what we call a thinker. Now, a thinker doesn't solve the world's problems. A thinker presents certain viewpoints and hopes that someone else will pick up the banner and carry on. So we don't have too many people that are called thinkers, because they are followers. And the followers sometimes don't want to be disturbed. Thinkers want to disturb you because they want you to think about it and make your own personal decision. So when humans get together, we try and hope for the best. And we're looking for people who will help us understand and handle tomorrow. So life goes on regardless of the human endeavors.
Thank you, Dennis. So picking up where we left off last time, this is basically in the preface to Dr. Savage's book. He actually pulled out, interestingly enough, two verses from the Book of Proverbs, which we know from our tradition. The Book of Proverbs was penned by King Solomon, the son of King David. And the particular two verses that Dr. Savage chose to inscribe into this section, or basically before the first chapter of the book, is, "Honor the Lord with your substance and with the first fruits of all of your increase. So shall your barns be filled with plenty, and your vat shall overflow with new wine." Now, at a superficial glance, this is Dr. Savage covertly and overtly suggesting that if we have been blessed with something beyond our basic human much-needed requirements, you know, food, drink, a dwelling to live in, that there's a payback. Yes, of course, we are thankful for the governments, the countries that are hosting us. Here now we're in the United States of America. But beyond that as well, there is another type of being thankful. We're giving thanks to the one who spoke and the world came into being. And one of the interesting things that is connected with this idea of honoring the Lord with your substance, from our oral Torah tradition, that there is a ethical teaching coming out of this, which I'm going to kind of extrapolate, and I'm looking forward to hear what Dennis has to say. When you honor the Creator with your substance, it's not just your monetary capabilities, but from Rashi, who we've talked about many times in past broadcasts and hope to have the merit to speak about Rashi in the future, even to when King Solomon is talking about honoring the Lord with your substance, even honoring the Creator with you if you have been blessed with a pleasant voice, if you can sing, if you can deliver a kind word to another human being, if you can even talk nice to the animals that somehow interact with you in your daily journeys on the streets and byways and highways of this country, anywhere you are in the world, this is an offering up to use your talents and sensitivities. And King Solomon is telling us, I mean, it simply means, you know, to tithe one's money. But here as well, to tithe to the Creator something of your talents, abilities, not directly invested into your own economic benefit. Dennis, your take on these matters.
Well, this is a continuation of what I just mentioned, Don. and that is, here's a thinker not ignoring the words of the past, because there's people that had banners that they were following, and they were hoping that other people would pick it up. So here is something that was said millennium ago, and Dr. Savage is picking it up and sort of waving the banner here by saying, is this part of our future too? Can we ignore it? Obviously, we can't ignore it because the words endure. People may come and go, but the words still hang in there with life. So here he is talking about the past and the future at the same time, making a connection, which was the whole purpose of the words originally, to get people to think and to remember who and what they are, where they were, and where are they going.
Mm-hmm. The next part of that verse, verse 9 in Proverbs, and with the first fruits of your increase, this is talking about when, you know, at the time that King Solomon lived and for many years afterwards until the social conditions of the Jewish people changed. But again, this is instruction for all peoples, because also we all used to be living in agrarian societies and now we're living in the concrete jungles, as some would call it. The idea of tithing of one's produce. Now, I'm just going to want to give a Jewish perspective that our rabbis have instructed us that everyone, when it comes to agricultural produce, should give between 1/60th and 1/40th of the produce they get when they harvest that year's, you know, bringing in of what they've been blessed with. Now, of course, most of us, nearly all of us today, are working regular 9-to-5 or whatever shifts we're working. So it's suggested to give that, and sometimes even a little more, sometimes up to 5% of the net income. Some say 10%, some even will promote more. But the whole idea as well is there's two levels of giving. Again, giving of one's sensitivities and talents, and then to give of one's actual economic produce, that, you know, for one's salary. And I just want to mention, as part of the 7 universal commandments or laws, since it is not something which goes beyond human reason, that it has been heavily promoted within the Hasidic teachings and even the regular Jewish law teachings, that for the nations of the world, it should be something that they should pay attention to try to tithe from their money. And I know for people that, say, go to like church or other faith-based communal gatherings, that this is something which is well known to people of the Christian faith, and I'm sure it's also known by other people of other faiths. But Dennis, what can we do to encourage people not to undermine their economic sovereignty, but to try to consider giving back more than just our talents, but actually to part with a little bit of our money to help others less fortunate, or given towards institutions that are helping the less fortunate?
Giving is a strong idea because it covers a whole range of subjects. And it could be giving of money. It could be giving of produce if you're a farmer. And if you're a thinker, it's like giving your thoughts that you want to be, your precious thoughts that you think should be shared. A lot of people have a hard time understanding this concept that other people are giving, because they want sometimes to measure it. And when it comes from the mind, there is no measurement. But some people are happy by saying, well, let's put it on the scale and see how much it weighs. Is the weight the important part, or using the scale more important? So we have this problem of measurement, and we sometimes don't know how to measure ourselves, yet we want to give of ourselves. So a thinker would think, well, I'll try to help you to understand. I may not solve your problems, but if I'm helping you to understand, maybe you can share that and transfer it to another human, another human, another human. That way you're distributing the precious things. If you're centered on money, if you're centered on grain, if you're centered on fruits, that's another thing. So your reference, your reference point, can be used by anybody. But we have to give something, because if we haven't given anything, that means we've been selfish. And there's nothing worse that can happen than if you recognize that you are being selfish and you're not going to change.
True. Now, Dennis, we had a, you know, we've talked about Murphy's Law, we have Down's Law. For some reason, you know, I purchased Dr. Savage's book via Kindle, which is basically an online form of reading a book. Now, what happened was, as I was doing that, it shut down, and I have to, as I'm speaking to you, go back in and reestablish my connection with Kindle. Now, I do remember, you know, I know that we're in the middle of the verses 9 and 10. So as we are speaking about verse 10, I am going to try to, I see I can go to Gmail. I'm going to try to reestablish my connection. So as we read, thank God that we're at a point where I can read from verse 10 of Psalms, which is how Dr. Savage continued in the opening of his book. And your barns will be filled with plenty, and your vats will overflow with new wine. Now, perhaps this is ultimately for many people, and I have to admit, it also kind of motivates me. I'm not going to say I am totally 1,000 altruistic, that King Solomon is teaching us that, in fact, when we give of ourselves, when we give of our sensitivities, when we even give of some of our economic bounty, what is occurring, or what can be a consequence, and King Solomon is pretty assertive about this, is that your barns will be filled with plenty, and your vats will be overflow with new wine. Now, again, King Solomon was speaking within the terms of the mindset of an agriculturally based people in an agrarian society, which, again, if we go back, before the Industrial Age, what are we talking about, 200 years ago, and how much more so, 300, 400, 500, 700 years ago, most people were living off of the land directly or indirectly and taking the produce and selling it in the market. So King Solomon is telling us, if we are going to honor the Creator with that substance, which is our sensitivities and talents, say a sweet voice, an encouraging voice, that we should not expect a diminishment of our economic sovereignty. In fact, from the teachings of our sages, this person being Mitzvah David, we shouldn't be surprised when our economic bounty actually increases. And even there are midrashim, which is from the oral Torah tradition, that people were prosperous as long as they separated their tithes properly and suffered calamities when they failed to do so. Now, as well, this whole idea of your vats, your wine vats will overflow with new wine, that there's even an expression from one great rabbinical teacher, Ibn Ezra, saying the vats will be bursting forth. Now, wine is also connected to the idea of when something is like a grape which is crushed, that there's an outcome of something even beyond the expectation of the person who would eat the grape. There is a totally new substance, either grape juice, and if it's handled correctly, contained in a barrel and let to age, it becomes a wine, a matter of intoxication. So we can actually experience, Dennis, as I'm going to assert from my own humble experience on this earth, is that we can be, not only can we be economically blessed and rewarded, but we can become intoxicated by a type of lifestyle of wanting to give as much as we can. And when we can't give with the dollar coming out of our pocket, at least we can become intoxicated by the idea of thinking good, positive thoughts towards the noble goal of trying to enable another human being, whether it be in our personal family, someone we know in our community, or even a stranger in the streets. your take on these matters.
Yes, well, I think Solomon was also a thinker, because he was drawing these references in. But the remainder of the question is that if you have all the money you need and you have all the food to survive, what's left? What's left is your mind. Are you getting peace of mind? Because you can be the richest man and the most giving person of all your personal possessions, but where is your mind? What do you project to the people who you interact with? If you don't tell them, or at least hint that you must have a better mind than you can conjure up yourself, then what are you doing all this for? What is the purpose of accumulating wealth, produce, or anything like that? Now, that's in agricultural terms. Nothing wrong with that, mm-hmm. because that was the understanding at that time. But the same question can be asked: where is your mind? Is it any better because you accumulated so much grapes or produce from the farm? We must remember that the questions here is that, have you made a difference with your giving or your thinking, and are you in a better position than before? We cannot use material wealth as a judgment or a measurement of how good or well we are.
Beautiful, Dennis. And as you did that, I was able to reestablish my Kindle connection with Dr. Savage's book. So thank you very much, and let's segue to the next section. And Dr. Savage goes on to say, and Dennis, this is where you'll have to elaborate on two terms which I understand in English, but I don't understand what they are referring to. He talked about, Dr. Savage talking about, there's been a transformation society based on, he recalls when he was a child, that it seemed like every other car had a Catholic owner, and they had a little St. Christopher statue on the dashboard. Dr. Savage mentions that even though myself and my parents didn't have one, I liked that there were people who believed in God. And then Dr. Savage goes on to say, and one day he woke up, and it was past the previous president's administration, and there were dream catchers hanging off whip mirrors in cars. Now, Dennis, maybe you can explain to me, who was St. Christopher, and what is a dream catcher that a person would want to be hanging off the mirror in their car?
Well, what happens is we all have to use little amulets and other things that's been in history going back several millennium. And that is
right.
That there's a hope or belief that the future has something there for us. St. Christopher is one of those people that was sort of by convention, that was, he represented the impossible, and that if you could handle or strive to overcome the impossible, St. Christopher could help you do that. That
mm-hmm.
doesn't mean you were talking to God. It just means that he would help you where you consider the future almost impossible to handle. So there's hope, faith, and belief in those concepts, that you don't give up, that you're always ready for the future. So that's an important concept, because as Dr. Savage noted, all these people believed in what they were doing because it would lead to a better future, meaning they could overcome those things that seemed like they were impossible. But if you have enough faith and hope, belief, strong beliefs, that this was a common bond among people and that we would overcome. So if you don't feel it, you may not see it. So it isn't just in the little amulet that's hanging down from something. It's what it represents. And that's an important thing. Now, this dreamer thing, I don't know what that dreamer thing is. I probably know it by another name, but I'm not connecting with that word right now, Don.
Okay, no problem. Now, fast forwarding a little bit into the preface to the book, God, Faith, and Reason, Dr. Savage admitted that there was a period in his life where he started to have bad dreams. And the type of dreams he was having, as like he was experiencing nightmare movies every night. So he thought to himself, there must be a way for him to deal with it. And that is, what he did was, he turned to, as he called it, an ancient Hebrew prayer book, which is basically accessible to anyone today in English for Jewish people. And anyone who, I know there are many people who just like to browse through them to look for things, to see, oh, this is what the Jewish people are talking about. And they're really, you know, and you'll see it's basically praying to God and asking that we be spared from the Satan, not be trapped by him and not be connected to bad neighbors and bad influences. But Dr. Savage wanted to share at the beginning of this book this whole idea of prayer before retiring at night. And he said that it helped him with his issues with nightmares. Now, he then poses a question that if one's belief, so he calls it religion, if religion doesn't have an effect on one's life, there's no reason to go to church or synagogue. In other words, if it doesn't make you feel better, what good is it? And then he even challenges a person, you know, are you just waiting to get to the next world? And he questions that this could be a big gamble. And he says, a big gamble, my friend. Now, he says something which I can agree and disagree to some extent, that he says he can't live for the next world. He doesn't even know if there is a next world. Well, I agree with him. This is the only earth that we know of. But from a faith-based perspective, I am aware of, because I've been learning 33 years, Torah, written and oral Torah traditions. And also, on my journey to become and I'm still a work in project, a Torah observant Jew, I know that other faiths talk about the next life, the next world. But I know within my faith, and I try to implement my faith into action and fuse it with some intellect, whether it be secular or Torah knowledge, is that we have to make this world as good as possible. And one of the things that is mentioned in that section of the prayer before retiring at night is the idea of forgiving someone. That the prayer mentions that anyone who has offended me, anyone has hurt me in any form, you know, I want to give my forgiveness. Because basically not to go to sleep with a sense of heavy-hearted hatred or disdain for another human being. Because the truth of the matter is, we have a teaching that, you know, sleeping is 1/60th of passing on. And it is to our benefit, before retiring every night, to forgive and go on to live. We don't necessarily say that we forget, but we forgive in order that we should continue to live and unburden ourselves from this type of stress, which in fact has a very positive health benefit. And this is shown to be clinically true, as reported in Johns Hopkins Medicine, this whole idea of being able to forgive. And it deepens our empathy with other people, that we realize that the relationships we form with people in this world can continue despite the disappointments that we may incur from other people, and that ultimately we must include the act of forgiving of ourselves. Now, these matters can also help us. By being able to forgive, can actually strengthen our immune system. And according to Dr. Josh Axe, who is a doctor, a faith-based, I believe he's Christian, he talks about if you have the ability to forgive, you can actually generate more testosterone for yourself if you're a man. And also, for those who have gone through PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, the ability to forgive means that we can accept, even though a person may have been severely affected by an event or serious events of life, which can cause a person no other option other than to flee from that emotional trauma, physical trauma, physical abuse, natural disaster, emotional abuse. And some people have even, and I know cases personally, where people have been religiously abused. So Dennis, I threw a lot onto the plate, but I know you have a big fork and knife and spoon to break down these type of thinking. I'm looking forward to see how you react to what Dr. Savage wrote and my interfacing with that type of teaching.
Well, you just used the dump truck to dump it on my plate. What you did there was open up a can of worms that's been around for a long, 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 long time. Well, let's just begin with the humans themselves. What happens is during the day we can control our mind, our thoughts. We can understand between right or wrong. But when we go to sleep, our cognizant values that we use during the day to control our thinking is not there. So therefore, and this is what a lot of psychologists have spoken about and basically proven over the years, that when you go to sleep at night, you release your mind, your thoughts, without any real controls. When that happens, you think of, and a lot of humans go through this, it's been affecting human mind since the beginning of time, and that is your mind takes off and does things. Some people it goes to the left, some people it goes to the right, some people they go straight ahead, plowing on, not knowing what they're doing. But as you mentioned, the good doctor here said he had a prayer book that he used.
Dr. Josh, oh yeah, I'm sorry. I thought you were jumping Dr. X. Dr.
No,
Savage.
I haven't gone that far yet. So what happens is somebody was using a little prayer book to help them control their mind before they go to sleep so that they're in the right frame of mind. And they're looking for a little peace, consolation, and understanding before they go to bed, because they don't want to give themselves up to these wild and crazy ideas that may be bouncing around in their head. So to do this is enforcing a little discipline on your mind before you go to sleep. That's why people say, say a prayer at the edge of your bed, or do something, light a candle, whatever it is. You have to do something that demonstrates that you want to stay, you want to keep your peace of mind even though you're going to sleep. Can it be done? Well, that can only be measured by yourself in your own mind, because whatever the hereafter is exists by the image in your mind. So you must be able to use some type of discipline to help you understand and establish where the pillars of peace are. This is helpful to everybody. It not only relieves stress, but the real problem is that it satisfies your conscience. Your conscience doesn't go to sleep when your physical body goes to sleep. It starts wandering around just like whatever is in your mind, or maybe they're one and the same thing. However, if you go to sleep thinking that you forgave everybody who did anything wrong to you, and in return, you hope that these other people that you did wrong, no matter how small or large, will forgive you, this is now a conscience-satisfying, soul-searching, finding some type of peace that you can live with. This has been going on ages and ages and ages. So, depending on what discipline you set up for your mind, what you can focus and concentrate on will make a difference as to what you should be thinking when you fall asleep. But you have to satisfy your conscience, or else you're not building on a peaceful mind. If it's not satisfied that you did your best during the day, well, then those little things that may disturb you will rightfully disturb you, because you don't have a second chance to go back over it. However, you do have a way of showing your intention to who? To God, that you didn't really mean it, sorry for doing it, and you hope you don't do it again. But this is like a self-confession, where we can do that at any time, as long as we believe ourselves. Because if you can't believe yourself, then you're going to start doubting things. And once you start doubting things, you unravel any discipline that you set up in your mind, whether you're during the day or even at night. So it carries on. These are transient items that we must exert control over from time to time. And if you can't sleep right, it means something is bothering you. Now, I'm not a genius for saying that, and anybody else who would say it. We know there's a disturbance there, but it's a disturbance in your personal mind. You can't really share this because you're the only one feeling it. So you got to protect yourself, and you protect yourself by using discipline type of ways of doing it. If you focus and concentrate on a positive future, it'll be very helpful.
Very good. And the idea of forgiveness, Dennis? As part
forgiveness is a relief. Forgiveness is a relief. You feel like you didn't do your best, and you want to take it back or redo it. You can't do it. Every moment that goes by becomes a moment in history. You cannot live in the past. You live for the future. So the fear is, am I going to repeat all the bad stuff that I did? Well, that's what we have to fight every day in our minds. And we all want to be hopeful and positive. And the way to do that is to use some type of a guide or belief that we can have enough self-discipline so we can avoid the mistakes of the past. One way of doing that is recognizing the mistakes you have made. Because if you can't recognize them, you'll never know how to get past them. You'll never know how to understand them. And you're bound to repeat them over and over.
That's beautiful. Now, I just want to make a correction on something that I asserted before. That I kind of jumped the gun for the sake of truth. I admit my mistake. You know, you're live on the radio show. That Dr. Savage then asserted that it helped him. Actually, when I look a little bit closer, he did not assert that. He just asked the question of, is there magic? You know, if there's no use for this prayer, then what was the point of creating it? I just want to clarify my mistake. I kind of jumped the gun because I was so surprised the first time I saw this when I opened up this Kindle connection, the fact that he would bring that into the equation. But something that doesn't surprise me, because I know on the air, when he broadcasts across the country, Dr. Savage is prone to quoting from Scripture and the next section of this introduction before the main body of the book will hopefully be sharing, if not today, in future presentations with God's blessing. He quoted from Jeremiah chapter 1, verses 4 and 5, namely, "And the word of the Lord came unto me, saying, Before I formed you in the belly, I knew you. And before you came forth out of the womb, I sanctified you. I have appointed you a prophet unto the nations." Now, I don't think by any shape, form of the imagination is Dr. Savage trying to connect some sort of dots to liken himself to a prophet. But what I would like to focus on, I'm very interested to hear what Dennis has to say, is yes, certain people have been sanctified to be given very high tasks in the creation, namely to raise the consciousness of not only their own communities, countries, nations, but who have stood out throughout the test of time, as whose wisdom should be accessible and is learned by all nations. And Jeremiah had this distinct title. In fact, in our tradition, he is one of our prophets who's called a prophet under the nation, you know, to the nations, the prophet for the nations. And here we see that in this prophecy that he experienced as a young man, the Creator told him to announce to others and ultimately for this to reach the ears of the nation, that he was appointed as a prophet. Now, to go back several steps in consciousness, I believe every human being was known by Creator before they were formed, and I believe every human being is sanctified with their purpose in life. Maybe we won't become prophets, but each one of us, because the Almighty Creator has allowed us to manifest into this world as a man or a woman, therefore we all have a special perception to share, first of all with ourselves, and hopefully we'll internalize that perception. Hopefully it's a very positive perception. It's an enabling perception we could share with others. And to understand that there is an instruction, even if we don't become the prophet unto the nations, but we have a sense of who we were before we were born. We were in God's mind. Who we are, to consider with great humility, the Creator took the time, in within the context of Creator's time, to think that we were worthy of being manifested in the world. And if we are firing all cylinders, which, you know, this is one in every, let's say, one in every billion human beings, we can share a message which will stand the test of time. Now, I personally am not looking for that type of honor as much as I feel it's my duty to promote the idea that everyone has been sanctified from the womb to take on his or her special mission as one of, now we have 7 billion stewards on the earth. Dennis, your take on these matters.
Well, the greatest satisfaction to a thinker is that other people will start thinking, because that's the hope, that many minds put together will come out with a better idea and understanding of what, who, and where we are. Getting back to little babies, every little baby is sanctified. Why? Because they have no bad thoughts. They don't know what anything bad is. They are only pure. It is now the question of trying to keep that purity as they grow up and adjust for the obstacles that are put in their way. So, some people are blessed to the point that their minds are a little bit more active than other people. Are they helping other people who need that mental help to understand and have a better, peaceful life? So, yes, there are people who I'm sure in the plan of God that we don't know, and we'll probably never know, is that we have to have some belief that that it's organized to a point that lifelines are there. And what other people think can be used as lifelines. So certain people have their thoughts set up to create these so-called lifelines, little guides to help people in their time of need or their time for understanding. So, yes, there are people that I'm sure that our Creator has set up to help other people. Who they are, where they are, they only evolve over a period of time. And sometimes we have people in the past who really came out with some purity and truth. Really, nobody accepted it or understood it. So that's why we have to worry about the words of the past that we can repeat today, have meaning for the future with us. So we're in this constant search of peace of mind, and how are we going to get it, and what are we going to do to follow the correct path? So, yes, this is like a can of worms, because it's like throwing everything into a salad bowl and hoping that the salads are all uniform. Once you start tossing the salad, the uniformity is gone.
True. But we have to remember, when we open that can of worms, we can put it on a little hook, catch a big fish, and we can get something out of the ocean or river or lake of consciousness that can not only give us some sort of cognitive, emotional, spiritual nourishment, we can share it with other people. So I just little play on the words of can of worms, and
nice encapsulation of a can of worms turning into something positive, Don.
Yeah. As they say, take your lemons, squeeze them. The lemons that we experience today, squeeze them and produce some lemonade. the next section of Dr. Savage's book, again, all this is in the preface, he talked about dreams before. Now he returns to dreams as it applies to Scripture in the book of Genesis, chapter 40, verses 6 through 8, where Joseph came on. This is Joseph has already been put in prison. For those of you who know the biblical narrative of the righteous Joseph, he was put in prison. And lo and behold, he came upon some fellow prison mates, as it reads here in Scripture, and Joseph came into them in the morning and said to them, and behold, they were sad. And he asked Pharaoh's officers that were with him in the ward of his master's house, saying, why do you look so sad today? And they said to him, we dreamed a dream, and there is no one that can interpret it. And Joseph said unto them, do not interpretations belong to God? Tell it to me, pray you. Now, it's very interesting. Dr. Savage talked about him having nightmares, and then questioning if that prayer would be effective. Kind of left it open end, kind of hinting that if it's not effective, then why use it? And then he switches over to something which is kind of an exponential, perspective on the process of dreams. That yes, we can be bothered by dreams, as witnessed by the two officers of Pharaoh, who imprisoned along with Joseph. And Joseph says, "Do not interpretations belong to God? Tell it to me, I pray you." So here is Joseph asserting that on the one hand, only God can interpret these dreams, that no one seems to be able to interpret it for you two. But tell me, I pray you. So obviously Joseph had some sort of inside track, some sort of godly perception that he could interpret them. And in fact, he did interpret them. And as he interpreted them, there was the manifestation of one officer would be restored to his office serving the king, mainly the chief wine steward, and the baker would be put to death because, according to oral Torah tradition, that either consciously or subconsciously or covertly, overtly, he put a pebble in the bread of the paro, and if he had swallowed that pebble, it could have been injurious, even killed the king of Egypt. So Dr. Savage, in relation to that, springs off into the idea that some people assert that religion is not really for the benefit of intelligent people, but rather for people who are the opposite of intelligent, and that there are those who will assert that those who criticize religious or faith-based beliefs are basically the truly wise ones. Now, the reason why Dr. Savage mentioned that, because this is where I made the mistake before. Now I realize why I made the mistake by asserting he said that prayer book, that prayer helped him, because in this section he does say that the prayer did help. And he asserts that it was better than any herb tea he'd ever taken. And he reads the following, which is something I talked about before. It goes like this. Master, this is in Jewish tradition we do before we go to sleep. Master of the universe, I hereby forgive anyone who has angered or vexed me. So, and it goes further on to say, Master of the universe, I hereby forgive anyone who has angered or vexed me or sinned against me, either physically or financially, against my honor or anything that is mine, whether accidentally or intentionally, inadvertently or deliberately, by speech or by deed. In this incarnation or another, may no man be punished on my account. May it be your will, Lord my God and God of my fathers, that I sin no more nor repeat my sins. Neither shall I again anger you nor do what is wrong in your eyes. The sins I have committed erase in your abounding mercies, but not through suffering or severe illness. And then he goes on to mention that later on, there is a prayer in that same section of our prayers. May the words of my mouth and meditation of my heart be accepted for you, Lord, my strength, my Redeemer, our Father, lie us down in peace. Our King, raise up to do a good life in peace. Improve us. And I think that is the essence of that prayer, that we should have the faith. I'm turning to you, Dennis, that, and of course you can comment whatever you want on what I just read, but the idea is, the whole idea of making this prayer before we go to sleep at night excuse me, tomorrow's a new day. What I didn't accomplish today, with God's blessing, I might be able to accomplish tomorrow. Therefore, before I do anything, aside from going to sleep at that point, I ask you, Creator, bless me that I can improve my service as one of the 7 billion stewards upon this blessed earth.
What you're talking about, Don, is universal absolution. And that exists in your mind. We hope that it is something that's worthwhile because we can only imagine it. We cannot produce it. So based on the power of our mind, we think that by showing our good intentions that we can come out with universal absolution. It's a great idea. But before you go to sleep, you must concentrate and focus on that because you want the theme of that to resonate when you go to sleep. And that's where the help comes in because what you're saying is, I don't want to judge myself by my actions, but my intentions. If you can get away with that, that's good. But we're still responsible for our actions. But our intentions, sometimes we put on another plane and we think that's the real plane we should be on. But since we're imperfect humans, we can never get to perfection. But that doesn't mean you stop trying. And universal absolution, if everybody thought about it and practiced it, it'd be a happier, nicer, friendly world. But it only exists in our mind. And it's very hard to get a bunch of people to have the same thought in their mind at the same time. It's a can of worms. But we go about it anyway. But there's another theme here that you talked about without actually mentioning it. And that is thinkers. Thinkers have a corundum that says that if I haven't figured it out in my mind, maybe it's worth revisiting. In other words, they're not that arrogant to think that their thoughts are absolute in any way, shape, or form. So they don't mind going back and revisiting things. Why? Mm-hmm. We're not perfect. Maybe we missed something. Maybe we overlooked. Maybe we misinterpreted. Maybe we have second thoughts about things. All humans do. Even when we make a decision, we constantly check ourselves, did I make the right decision or not? But that's a fair way of going about it, your thoughts, together and on a straight path. So we must have little, I was about to say tricks, but they're not tricks because we'd only be tricking ourselves. We have to look at what we do and think on an honest basis and perform a judgment on ourselves that we can live with and wake up in the morning and feel like we had a little piece of peace.
Beautiful, Dennis. And with that, believe it or not, we've come to the conclusion of our second submission or part two of Soul Class 678, Creator, Faith, and Reason. And we're going to be segueing out of today's program with a wonderful song by a brilliant young artist. His name is Levi Robin. It's called Hey Love. But before we do that, Dennis, anything that you'd like to share with our listeners that they can take with and open up their own little can of worms in a positive way to get to know themselves better, get to know other people better, learn to be more forgiving and more involved and engaged in the wonderful act of created living. Last words for today, Dennis. What would you like to share with our blessed soul audience?
Yes, we like to say we love ourselves and other people, but the question is, do we practice it? Or do we just think about it and think that we had the correct intentions, so therefore we don't have to actually do it? The other part is, yes, we would like to forgive everybody as we forgive ourselves. But do we actually practice that? That's the hardest part. Why? Because you have to admit that you weren't perfect. A lot of people have a problem with that. Most of us do. So we have to constantly guard against that, by hoping that we're doing the right thing and reconfirming that and strengthening it as we go from day to day.
Beautiful, Dennis. I'd like to thank you for sharing one of your most valuable resources as you trot upon this blessed earth, your blessed time. And hopefully we will reconvene at the proper time that is auspicious for both you and I and for others listening in around the world that listen to our live or eventually our archive version of today's program. Blessed souls, I'd like to conclude that this is a production of blood, sweat, and tears to hopefully increase unity and to wipe away fears. And I have to say, as your local international cyberspace Torah Askan Torah activist, Don Zussi Goodman, we've all got to be good. I've got to be good. Dennis has got to be good. You, and you, wherever you may be in Ecuador or Lithuania or the Ukraine or North Dakota or South Africa or Ghana, just naming some of the places that are listening in live or in the archive version, because Atev HaTov LeHaiti, it was the nature of the good to do good. And since we are one, each one is one out of 7 billionth of the total human experience, that one of the ways that we can get through the day is to realize that we can scrimmage with our divine image and understand that when our friends are going through tough times, let's remind our friends who are going through tough times that, hey, love, I'm here for you. Whether it be our spouses, our children, our parents, our grandparents, our cousins, our friends in the community. Hey, love, I'm there for you. And this is Levi Rabin reminding us all in this song that if we have someone who's in need of our love, let's remind those people who need our love at that point that our love is there to help nurture them with God's blessings to get through that trying circumstances they are currently undergoing. And may everyone be healed of any infirmities spiritually, mentally, and emotionally. Take care, everyone.
Yeah.